Good afternoon and welcome to Illinois Lawmakers live coverage of Governor J.B. Pritzker's second annual budget message to a joint session of the Illinois General Assembly. I'm Jack Titchener. We're in the House Speaker's Gallery here in the historic chambers of the Illinois House of Representatives. I'm joined by Amanda Vinicky, the correspondent for Channel 11 Chicago Tonight, and Rich Miller, the CapitalFacts.com publisher. Good to have you both here.
Good to be here.
We know that going into this, that Governor Pritzker is going to make the centerpiece of the speech the call for the graduated income tax, which has been a centerpiece of pretty much the last year and the run-up to his election.
Right, and the entire budget that we've seen so far pretty much, it relies completely on this taxing, this graduated income tax passing. If not, he's going to hold back $1.4 billion in spending starting in, December, right? So he's going to have some money to play around with, but it's phony money until we figure out what's going to happen with the income tax.
Amanda, you sat in a little earlier with some senior administration officials to kind of do a budget walkthrough about what we expect. So this is, as I understand it, overall, with the graduated income tax, if it passes, a $42.1 billion budget. Without it, it could be a $40.7 billion budget.
Right, and so as Rich noted, really what he's doing is presenting two paths forward. He's not laying it out as stark as that. Really what the administration is phasing it is, they're saying, we're going to put money in reserves should this constitutional amendment pass, should we have the additional revenue, and this is what we will do with it. So he's presenting two options. A path forward, one that would say here is the situation without the graduated income tax, the other one if he does get his way. So today is sort of another starting point. As Rich has noted, really everything that Pritzker has done is banking on this constitutional amendment passing, because otherwise you've sort of had things laying steady even as Illinois has some major fiscal challenges. This is his answer to it.
Right, our income is basically hovering around, the budget's hovering around the $40 billion mark. It has since lawmakers approved the income tax increase a couple of years ago, and there's still a huge backlog of overdue bills that's been hovering around the $7 billion mark over the past few years, down from what was it, $15 or $16 billion during the Rauner administration. So he's basically saying, to put Illinois back to work again, we have to make Illinois government work again.
Yeah, the government was essentially hollowed out over three different governors. Positions weren't filled, agencies couldn't afford to get things done to do what they're mandated to do under state law. DCFS, for instance, is a complete disaster over there, partly due to lack of funding, partly due to a lack of direction. So he's been saying since the beginning, we have to rebuild the government.
There's a reckoning that has to happen,
yes.
and it has not, because he is waiting for an answer from voters on this, would be my argument. It's sort of waiting, because as Rich noted, of course, all of this is playing out as much of the Chicago media, the Illinois media, the worldwide media is focused on a home in Ravenswood, the neighborhood in the city of Chicago, now that ex-governor Rod Blagojevich has been released from prison and is sort of holding this massive press conference. He is one of those governors that, as Rich noted, is sort of responsible for Illinois' fiscal state right now. Pensions, of course, are a huge part of this. He's the governor that oversaw skipping pension payments, leaving Illinois greater debt there. I mean, this
right.
is huge. You cannot ignore that.
It's absolutely right. I mean, the guy who really set us on this path just got out of prison yesterday.
So the whole situation, if you will, goes back to the Blagojevich years. But to be fair, the state of Illinois has actually been deficit spending probably since, the late 1990s? We were enrolling over school aid payments into the new fiscal year. So there's always been a lot of smoke and mirrors with the way the budget's constructed here.
Well, especially with pension payments.
Right.
That's long before Blagojevich.
Yeah, that's 100 years. of that.
And one of the things, as you said, the governor wants to go back in. He wants to start to restore some of those areas in state government. A few days before this budget speech, the governor made it known that the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services budget needs to come up. We've had some horrendous stories there. 123 children who had contact with DCFS over the past year have died. So he's wanting to spend $147 million more for that department and try to restore some of the other parts of the social safety network here.
As well as education. You know, for years, the state short shrifted school districts, where the Constitution says that we owe the preponderance of funding should come from the state, and it's not been anywhere near that for many, many years. And so that is one reason why the property taxes have gone so high.
And that is one of the areas that the governor is saying, hey, this is where we need the constitutional amendment. So you'll remember a few years back, actually under former Governor Bruce Rauner, there was a change in the funding formula meant to sort of even out because there is such a reliance on local property taxes. And that's where you have this great disparity in how much money is spent on each Illinois student from kindergarten through high school. So that plan is all predicated on more and more money from the state going towards school districts. Pritzker is saying, yeah, we can give some of that, but we're not going to really fulfill the state's duties under this relatively new funding law, again, sending more money to education, unless the constitutional amendment passes. So this is going to be, this is the speech today, but now we're going to see commercials, we're going to see ads from both sides, because of course the other side of that spectrum is, hey, make good with what money you have, Illinois government. There is a whole lot of spending increases in this budget and more to come.
Let's go back to that 2.5 year budget impasse. The state kept on spending as though the temporary income tax was still in effect. You were spending at the rate of $38, $39 billion a year, but you're only taking in $34 billion a year. So
right.
You could see how that quickly ratcheted up the amount of red ink that was in the budget.
That 2 years without a budget was just, you took a disaster and made it into, I mean, just craziness, insanity. We'll be digging out of that for years to come.
And what we're looking at with what is called Public Act 101-0008, that is the graduated income tax that's on the ballot coming up in November of this year for a vote by the public. That is supposed to raise over a year's time, roughly, what, $3.6 billion, something like that?
Correct.
So if it's passed in November, what we're talking about when we talk about reserves is that $1.4 billion or so that would be realized once that tax came into effect, if indeed it does.
Money that would come mostly from higher income earners. So again, what this constitutional amendment does is just give Illinois the authority to tax income at a rate that is higher for those who have a higher income level, lower for those whose income is less. Right now, it has to be flat across the board. And so the proposal that you're going to see on the ballot doesn't get into the nitty-gritty of any numbers. But the legislature has already passed a law that says if that constitutional amendment is approved by voters, these are the rates that would be in place. And again, how you're going to hear the governor phrasing it is, for a lot of people, that means a tax cut for lower income, what he describes as middle income earners. It's those who make more money that are going to be paying the bulk of that $1.4 billion increase.
And of course, Governor J.B. Pritzker is in the House chambers now. He's making his way to the podium to begin his budget message here in a few moments on Illinois Public Radio and Illinois Public Television.
Speaker Madigan, President Harmon, Leader Durkin, Leader Brady, Lieutenant Governor Stratton, my fellow constitutional officers, the General Assembly, the incomparable First Lady, MK, distinguished guests, yeah, that's okay to clap to. Distinguished guests and people of Illinois. My friends, not long ago, I shared with you news of our state's progress over the last year and my genuine confidence that our future is bright and that Illinois is growing stronger each day. I know I have a reputation for being a bit of an irrepressible optimist, something that's somewhat unusual among those who have held this job recently. But I believe that the cynics had their years in power, and that the people of Illinois suffered because of them. Being a cynic is easy. Cynicism, after all, demands only that you believe in the worst and do nothing to stop it from happening. It's optimism that's hard, because optimism demands hope and patience and faith, and most importantly, action. Last year, we began turning around the ship of state and turning it in the right direction. Today, we have the lowest unemployment rate in our history. We gave pay raises to working people, and once again, we began attracting more students here because we made college more affordable. Our resurgence has been fueled by the very source of our historic resilience, the fundamental strength and goodness of our people, who demonstrate time and again that they can overcome any challenge that comes their way. Never bet against that. Before I took office, we had 2 long years without a state budget, longer than any state in U.S. history. It nearly destroyed the lives of the most vulnerable children and families in Illinois, and it left all of us with billions of dollars in unpaid bills. It forced us to figure out how we would rebuild mental health care and schools and universities, and how we would attract job creators and give working families a fighting chance. And we did start to figure it out. Last year, Republicans and Democrats alike rolled up our sleeves, worked out our differences, and produced a bipartisan, balanced budget that has begun to put our state back on a sound fiscal path. We've taken enormous strides forward to undo years of financial mismanagement. For example, the state entered 2019 with almost $8 billion in unpaid bills. But a year later, responsible fiscal management has reduced that bill backlog by nearly $1 billion. Our late payment penalties, which had reached $950 million before I became governor, will fall to just over $100 million this fiscal year. In this regard, I want to praise the tremendous efforts of our comptroller, Susana Mendoza, and our treasurer, Michael Frerichs, who have been tireless advocates on behalf of getting our fiscal house in order. From 2015 to 2017, credit rating agencies downgraded our state's credit 8 times. Which means Illinois taxpayers were paying higher interest rates. But this year, rating agencies and analysts have noted a distinct improvement in our fiscal stability, and interest rates on our bonds have tumbled to their lowest rate since 2013. That will save tens of millions of dollars for taxpayers. Greater fiscal stability, fewer unpaid bills, lower interest payments. These are all monumental achievements in light of our state's fiscal condition just 13 months ago. How are we doing it? Most of these advances are attributable to a disciplined approach to managing our state's limited resources responsibly. And it's important that we continue that hard work in the years ahead. The budget I propose to you today will build on the steady progress we've been making over the last year. Our choices remain hard, our financial situation challenging. In the context of the past devastation wreaked upon our state, the proposal I share today takes a disciplined approach to managing our limited resources while also investing in the very efforts that will make our state stronger: better schools, greater public safety, more job-creating businesses, improved care for our most vulnerable children and seniors. After years of poor fiscal management, of past leaders lying about how we got here, of scapegoating the wrong people and problems, our constituents deserve some honesty. No amount of wishful thinking will wave away our structural deficit or our pension obligations. No amount of lip service will balance the budget or fund our schools or improve public safety. I want to give you one stark example of why a change in approach was so desperately needed. Bruce Rauner went to war with labor unions, and one consequence of that was millions of dollars in costs for the state due to litigation and back pay. In contrast, when I came into office, I negotiated substantial health care savings and finalized fair contracts with state workers. As a result, the upcoming fiscal year's budget will spend $175 million less, and we will save $650 million over 4 years. Lowering the wages of workers, trying to bankrupt the state, and seeking to destroy government didn't work. Also, trying to separate Chicago from the rest of Illinois, whether rhetorically or literally, will not solve the economic challenges of downstate Illinois. Quite the opposite. So some of you need to stop pretending that one part of Illinois can exist without all of the others. We are one Illinois. There are realities about running a state and caring for our people that we have to face with more clear-eyed resolve, with a focus on unity and far less partisanship. Our future genuinely does depend upon it. Once again this year, I approached this budget looking to use taxpayer dollars as efficiently as possible. I'm pleased to say that this proposed budget saves taxpayers more than $225 million annually and more than $750 million over 3 years through operational efficiencies, possible agency consolidations, and the elimination of excess boards and commissions. And there is potentially $100 million more in additional structural savings in fiscal 2022 and beyond through long-term initiatives. I believe that we are sent here to effectively manage the resources necessary to deliver what Illinois families need: good schools and health care, clean water and clean air, paved roads and sturdy bridges, a growing economy. Let's all agree that effective government demands efficient government. As we continue to make progress repairing the financial damage of the past, we must begin restoring safeguards for our future. It starts by building up reserves in our budget stabilization fund, more commonly referred to as the rainy day fund. It's been more than a decade since the last contribution was made to the rainy day fund, and it was almost entirely wiped out in 2017 under my predecessor. The budget I am introducing today begins to restore it, dedicating $100 million to the Rainy Day Fund over the next 16 months. In addition, in concert with Senator Heather Staines, who is one of the General Assembly's most responsible budgeteers, Comptroller Susana Mendoza recently proposed legislation that will create mandatory annual contributions to the Rainy Day Fund, a great step to improve fiscal protection for Illinois' future. Here's another responsible step that we're all taking together. Last year, we worked on a bipartisan basis to pass a new source of general funds revenue and create tens of thousands of jobs with the legalization of adult use cannabis. Our first focus was on making this law the most socially equitable in the nation. That's why 25% of revenues are earmarked to reinvest directly in the communities most severely impacted by the war on cannabis. Licensing fees from the first round of medical dispensaries have already provided a $30 million loan fund so that social equity applicants have access to capital to start new cannabis-related businesses, a program that doesn't exist in any other state at this scale. And I pardoned more than 11,000 individuals with low-level cannabis convictions. And that's just the beginning of our efforts. It's just the beginning of our efforts to remove barriers to housing, employment, and education for hundreds of thousands of people. With a successful first month of sales under our belt, I can conservatively project that adult use cannabis sales will generate at least $46 million in revenue for our general fund in the coming fiscal year, of which $10 million will go directly to pay down our bill backlog. A second source of revenue that we passed last year is from expanded gaming, including sports betting, which appears to be on track and will be up and running in time for March Madness. As you know, gaming revenue directly funds our bipartisan historic Rebuild Illinois capital plan, which provides critical relief to state and local budgets for badly needed maintenance and construction work at our universities, our community colleges, and state facilities. My office is working with the City of Chicago and the General Assembly to make a much needed adjustment in the legislation passed last spring to help make sure the Chicago casino is a success that will help fund projects throughout the state. I hope you all will join me in supporting these legislative efforts when they come before the General Assembly this session. Most importantly, this budget represents a bridge to the future, where I believe we have an opportunity to change our tax structure so working families are treated more fairly. For at least the last 50 years, the burden of shoring up our state finances has fallen hardest on the 97% of Illinoisans who make $250,000 a year or less. You've been paying a higher portion of your income when you include income taxes, property taxes, and sales taxes than those who make $1 million a year or more. That's not fair. And I've made it very clear that I believe it's time for a change. Last year, this General Assembly took an important step forward and passed income tax rates so that working class and middle class families will pay a lower rate and wealthy people will pay a higher rate. I believe this is far more fair than the flat tax rate that we have today. These rates would go into effect only if Illinois removes the constitutional prohibition on a graduated tax, a decision that will be made by voters in November. If the constitutional amendment is passed, those rates will go into effect January 1st, 2021, midway through our budget year. As your governor, I take seriously my constitutional duty to offer a balanced budget that lives within our means as a state, whatever may transpire. To address the uncertainty in our revenues, this budget responsibly holds roughly $1.4 billion in reserve until we know the outcome in November. Because this reserve is so large, it inevitably cuts into some of the things that we all hold most dear: increased funding for K-12 education, universities and community colleges, public safety, and other key investments. But as important as these investments are, we cannot responsibly spend for these priorities until we know with certainty what the state's revenue picture will be. Even if the graduated income tax does not take effect, our budget nevertheless continues our progress, although at a much slower pace than I think we require to get ourselves out of the hole previous administrations have dug for us. And if the graduated tax rates do take effect, this budget proposal takes major steps to stabilize our fiscal condition and build on the historic investments and improvements that we've made across the board to better serve the people of our state. One of Illinois' most intractable problems is the underfunding of our pension systems. We must keep our promises to the retirees who earned their pension benefits and forge a realistic path forward to meet those obligations. The fantasy of a constitutional amendment to cut retirees' benefits is just that, a fantasy. The idea that all of this can be fixed with a single silver bullet ignores the protracted legal battle that will ultimately run headlong into the Contracts Clause of the U.S. Constitution. You will spend years in that protracted legal battle, and when you're done, you will have simply kicked the can down the road, made another broken promise to taxpayers, and left them with higher tax bills. This is not a political football. This is a financial issue that is complex and requires consistency and persistence to manage, with the goal of paying the pensions that are owed. That's why my budget delivers on our full pension payment and then some, with $100 million from the proceeds of the graduated income tax dedicated directly to paying down our pension debt more quickly. We should double that number in subsequent years. Next year would be the first year in state history that we will make a pension payment over and above what is required in statute. It begins to allow us to bend the cost curve and reduce our net pension liability faster. At the same time, without breaking our promises, we must relentlessly pursue pension initiatives that reduce the burden on taxpayers. This year, the state's required payment to the state employees' retirement system alone will be $32 million less than it would have been without the optional pension buyout program. We extended that program last year because it's good for taxpayers. That's why I've asked all of the state's retirement systems to fully implement buyout programs across our systems. What we do to reduce future net pension liabilities for our state and local pension funds has an enormously positive benefit for taxpayers. Last year, working with members of this General Assembly, we did what no one had been able to do after more than 70 years of trying: consolidate the investments of the 650 local police and firefighter funds into two statewide systems. Because of their collective size, these funds are projected to see billions of dollars of improved returns over the next 20 years. That means lower property tax pressure on families and businesses across the state. This is a great example of how both sides of the aisle can come together with reasonable solutions to address intractable problems. Let's continue on that path. Over the past year, we've made great strides to improve our schools and build back our higher education system, and this budget continues those investments. For more than a decade, our state universities saw significant declines in enrollment. But today, because of the important investments we made in MAP grants and school funding, for the first time in many years, applications are up at our public universities, and some schools, including UIUC and Illinois State, are seeing an increase in applications, not just from in-state students, but out of state too. Investments in our universities are giving people and companies from all over America and the world new reasons to choose Illinois. Just last week, I announced that with the support of businesses and philanthropists, the state will invest in University of Illinois' new technology hub called Discovery Partners Institute. With it, we're supporting nearly 50,000 new economy jobs in the next 10 years, with an economic impact of $19 billion. Integral to DPI's success is the Illinois Innovation Network, which will radiate across the state to 15 other university campus hubs, from Chicago to Rockford to Peoria to Edwardsville. We're investing in workforce development, innovation, and R&D all across our state. DPI is already succeeding. Azriel Alvarado was born here in Illinois and then moved to Panama with his parents when he was very young. He never lost his Illinois roots, though, and dreamed of attending the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign to study computer science. Azriel set his sights on their world-renowned engineering program, moving home to Illinois to attend Oakton Community College and settle back into his life in the United States. After 2 years, he was accepted as a transfer student into the U of I engineering school, and he hasn't looked back. Azriel says, most people don't imagine community college as the path to academic success, but he learned that the most popular way to do things isn't always the best way to do things. He's now studying as a DPI City Scholar and intends to set down roots and become a computer scientist here in Illinois. Azriel is just one example of how investing in our state can attract and retain invaluable talent. Azriel is here today, and I'd ask him to stand so that we can recognize your terrific achievements. Making college more affordable for in-state high school students ought to be among our state's highest priorities. My budget proposal for next year aims to make community college tuition free for all MAP-eligible students whose families make under $45,000 a year. Today, we have two students here whose families and communities will be stronger thanks to their hard work and our investments in MAP grants. They personify exactly why we need to set aside MAP funding, especially for community college students. Lincoln Land Community College here in Springfield is lucky to count them among their student body. When Lauren Hernandez was 12, her six-year-old sister was diagnosed with cancer. After watching how hard the nurses worked to help her sister every day, she felt drawn to the healthcare profession. And when her sister passed away a few years later, it cemented Lauren's conviction to become a nurse. Today, Lauren is married and the mother of a beautiful baby boy, and MAP grants are covering the portion of her tuition that she couldn't afford. She's the first person in her family to attend college. She's working overnight shifts at St. Francis Hospital, and she's why our future as a state is so bright. Please give Lauren a round of applause for her hard work and her commitment. I also want to introduce you all to Brandon Eilenfeld, who earned his GED at Lincoln Land and is in the final semester of his HVAC program. He'll graduate this spring with a degree and the ability to do work that he loves. Brandon is also a husband and a father, and after a full day at work at Illinois National Bank and a full evening at school, he finds time to spend with his family. But he knows that an education is the key to being able to get a good job to support them. Without MAP grants, he would have had to take on loans and debt with two young children. For Brandon, this is an opportunity he wouldn't have had otherwise, and it's an opportunity you all made possible by expanding the MAP grant program. Please give a round of applause to a great family man and a hard worker, Brandon Eilenfeld. There is no more critical investment that we can make in the future of our state than in our bright and ambitious young people like Azriel, Lauren, and Brandon. So my budget proposal adds another 20,000 new scholarship students overall, on top of the 10,000 additional MAP grant and AIM High scholars that you funded this year. And we will continue rebuilding our universities and community colleges with a 5% funding increase, which, among other things, allows the University of Illinois to provide a free tuition for students whose families make less than $67,000 per year. Another way to make college more affordable is to help our students earn college credit before they ever graduate from high school, potentially saving thousands of dollars in tuition down the road. Administrators and teachers across the state are engaged in this work, and it's making a difference at places like Fenton High School, a majority-minority high school in Chicago's western suburbs, where most students qualify as low income. A few years ago, a snapshot of an advanced placement classroom at Fenton didn't look much like the actual student body. So Fenton's leadership began expanding their advanced placement program, and they now reach a third of the entire student body. Even more impressively, AP scores have gone up across all racial and ethnic groups. And in March, the College Board named Fenton Advanced Placement District of the Year. Fenton provided the opportunity for their students to achieve extraordinary success and to save thousands of dollars on their first year's tuition. We should follow Fenton's lead and make it easier for more students to earn college credit in high school. My budget proposal last year requested $2 million to defray the cost of the AP test fee for low-income students, and you approved it. I'm making a request for FY21 of $2.5 million. It's an innovative and cost-effective way to make college more affordable. Speaking of removing financial barriers to college, 23 years ago, our state launched an investment program that lured tens of thousands of Illinois families to invest early in their children's educations through the College Illinois program. The program's creators didn't forecast that tuition increases would outstrip market returns, and we find ourselves in a place today where the program will be insolvent in 6 years. We didn't create this problem, but we are charged with fixing it. And rather than wait until the last minute, my budget puts a $27 million down payment on solvency for College Illinois in FY21. It's time to make good on the existing contracts that families signed up for and reassure them that their children's college tuition will be paid. We all want our children to go to college prepared to succeed, and that means investing in public schools that serve all our students from their earliest days. This budget makes a historic investment in K-12 schools with a new $350 million of equitable funding as Illinois continues down the path of ending our ignominious distinction as the worst state in the nation for state funding of public education. This is not nearly enough to fund our schools properly and allow us to alleviate spiraling local property tax burdens throughout our state. But in a year dominated by limited resources and guided by prudent decisions about our state budget, this is the strongest investment that we can afford to make today. Funding isn't the only determinant of a healthy school. Great teachers make great schools. But we have thousands of unfilled teaching positions throughout Illinois. This budget invests in strengthening our future teacher pipeline with increased funding for the Illinois Golden Apple Teacher Preparation Program and scholarships. And I'm also proposing support for accelerator programs that help people who are seeking a second career in teaching to transition into the profession faster. In addition, this budget seeks to address the mental health concerns that schools face with their students every day. I've directed our Emergency Management Agency, Board of Education, and State Police to apply for federal grants to launch a statewide school violence prevention tip line, a highly effective concept pioneered in Colorado after the Columbine tragedy. And I've proposed state funding to supplement the federal grants and develop curriculum to change the culture of stigma and silence around mental health. Students, parents, teachers, friends will be able to call in with real concerns about a child's well-being, possibly even about their survival, and a professional can check in on them. Here in Illinois, our tip line will be called Safe to Help Illinois, a confidential reporting program intended to be available via text, phone call, app, and social media platforms. Prioritizing our youngest Illinoisans offers the strongest return on investment for our future. Kindergarten is nearly too late to begin educating a child. Social-emotional development begins at birth, and a child's earliest interactions are the most important ones. That's why I'm determined to make Illinois the best state in the nation to raise young children. When our families lack access to quality early childhood education and childcare, we all lose. I propose expanding our early childhood block grant funding by an additional $50 million. Not as much as I would like, but responsibly moving our state another step toward universal preschool for every low-income child. This budget also allows us to move forward on my pledge to offer evidence-based home visiting services to all of our most at-risk families with very young children, a service that is proven to pay dividends in supporting parents. For too many families, quality childcare has become prohibitively expensive. Low and middle-income parents are those hit the hardest by a rise in childcare costs that has not kept pace with wages. I'm proud to propose a continued expansion of the Child Care Assistance Program so that we can maximize federal funding to offer reduced copays for families of the children we serve and improve the quality of the care that they receive. This will result in eligible families paying no more than 7% of their income for childcare. Since I took office, it's been a priority to provide health care that is accessible, preventable, and equitable. I am proposing a substantial increase for the second year in a row in mental health and addiction treatment services. This 2021 budget includes a $40 million increase funded in part by revenues from the successful rollout of adult use cannabis, which dedicates 22% of cannabis taxes to these programs. When I took office a year ago, we were handed an enormous Medicaid backlog of more than 140,000 people who had applied for health care coverage, but whose applications were simply never reviewed. This includes newborns, families with young children, and seniors entering nursing care at the end of their lives. People got sick and couldn't see a doctor. Some of the people on the list waited for more than a year. That's unconscionable. So my teams at HFS, DHS, and DOIT worked in a concerted, collaborative effort and have reduced the backlog by 70,000 people. That's healthcare coverage for a population the size of Decatur. There's more to do, and we are committed to doing it. And that's why this budget adds employees at the Department of Human Services, allowing them to help finish the job. We also budgeted $4.5 million to restore the Vital Healthcare Navigator program that the Trump administration eliminated, leaving hundreds of thousands of families and employers without any assistance. This program helps small businesses and their employees and families lower their healthcare costs as they look for coverage options through the federal insurance marketplace. Last year, we began restoring funding to the home-delivered meals program to reduce the existing wait list and to deliver proper nutrition to thousands more senior citizens. It's a program that improves quality of life and saves money in the long run through a reduction in chronic health problems. For the coming year, I've once again proposed an increase of $2 million for the program. As Donald Trump continues to attack the safety net for seniors, my administration is doing everything we can to fight back. Our Department of Public Health has been hard at work over the last year restoring the federal immunization program that my predecessor closed down, which allowed us to beat back a potential outbreak of measles and other diseases across Illinois. And once again, DPH has done outstanding work coordinating with Chicago health officials and the CDC in fighting coronavirus. Thanks to their collective efforts, the risk to the public remains low. I'm also particularly proud that this budget supports the necessary additional funding for DPH to maintain our current service levels for family planning and related health services, without caving to the Trump administration's outrageous gag rule on women's reproductive rights. There's nowhere in state government that needs more attention and resources than the Department of Children and Family Services. There are no overnight fixes for DCFS, no easy promises that can be made, no simple solutions for an agency that deals with some of our most complex societal problems. There's an old saying that the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, and the second best time to plant a tree is today. So we began planting trees last year by bringing in new DCFS leadership and outside expert advisors and monitors. Every staff person from top to bottom is being retrained. New policies and procedures have been enacted. The hotline has deployed new technology and added staff. We're moving forward with new ideas from experts that will transform the agency. Many of the most important reforms of DCFS that are being enacted were recommended by respected experts like Chapin Hall at the University of Chicago and Casey Family Programs. Outside contractors are also working with DCFS and DOIT to bring better technology to improve how cases are tracked and more prolific use of mobile technology for caseworkers to keep better records. After I heard from frontline workers a year ago that their jobs were harder because they couldn't test parents on-site for substance abuse, we started rolling out on-site drug testing again. We have a nationally acclaimed simulation program with a training lab in Springfield and a newer one in Chicago, both of which provide real-life scenario training for frontline workers. Caseworkers and investigators are being retrained in these simulation labs so they can learn new techniques to manage difficult cases and investigations. Some of you have already visited these simulation labs, and I invite all of you to do so if you haven't. And you will see why I insisted that our FY21 budget allow DCFS to open a third simulation lab in Southern Illinois. Overall, this budget proposal for DCFS increases funding by 20% compared to what the state was spending in FY19. We will increase personnel numbers by nearly 150 new staff. That's on top of the 300 workers we added over the last year. This would represent an 11% staffing increase over the past 2 years. For the contracted agencies who carry out much of the work helping children and who struggle to retain staff because of the state's poor funding and payment delays, we are increasing funding by nearly 4%, only the third increase in 19 years. One of the moral tests of government is how we treat our most vulnerable. The funding needs of DCFS should transcend party and partisanship and be a cause that we can all rally around. It's become something of a political sport in this state over the last several years to present our fiscal issues as insurmountable. I'm here to tell you they are not. Our budget challenges are hard, no doubt about it. But it's a myth to think that they were ever easy. Our state has grown and changed so much over the years, and the complexities of running our government have evolved with it. Our future will not be built on the shaky rhetorical foundation of those who keep rooting for us to fail. Every decision we make about how we spend the money our citizens trust to our keeping is, at its root, a deeply moral undertaking. These lines on a budget spreadsheet, well, they give peace to sleepless nights worrying about medical bills. They are delivery on a deferred dream. They stand between poverty and prosperity. A road that is properly repaired and maintained is a car accident that never happens. A strong education system is the slingshot to success, allowing a child to thrive. Fully funding public safety means a life saved, a crime solved, and a justice system that is more equitable and fair. Every worry that we erase, every dream that we fund, every obstacle that we remove is a small bit of happiness that we give back to our citizens. Sometimes we forget that in 2020. We can add happiness back into people's lives. The pursuit of happiness is the real rhetorical and moral foundation of our government. The founders were optimists too, it turns out. With that singular focus at the heart of all that we do, with an eye to our future, and with prudence and responsibility as our guiding lights, I submit this budget proposal, and I urge the General Assembly to work with me in the pursuit of happiness for all Illinoisans. Thank you.
Governor J.B. Pritzker just completing his second annual budget message to a joint session of the Illinois General Assembly. This is live coverage on Illinois Public Television and Illinois Public Radio. I'm Jack Titchener. Alongside are Amanda Vinicky of Chicago Tonight on Channel 11 and Rich Miller of the CapitalFacts.com blog and newsletter here in Springfield. Rich and Amanda, this a longer speech, around 45 minutes or so by my count. Lots of detail on what he wants to do with this new budget, the bridge to the future, as he calls it, based upon passage of his graduated income tax proposal in November.
And there's no pension gimmick like he tried to do last year, which I give him a lot of credit for, considering how difficult the budget time is. And the other...
But he got a lot of pushback. That was not going to go over well, so a wise choice, perhaps, on his part there.
Avoid that fight. He's, as I was listening to this address, he's almost a singular figure in American politics right now. The amount of optimism that he exudes is just unmatched. If you look at all the presidential candidates on the Democratic side, they're all a bunch of grumpy gusses or what have you. This guy's up there saying, hey man, we can solve these problems. Now, can he? I don't know. But...
That's going to be a fight.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice change.
He said, I am an irrepressible optimist, and although we make political sport of saying our budget problems and all these different things are insurmountable, he says, not so.
Yeah, he really did. He took that issue head on, because I think some people perhaps could look at this and say, you're living in fairy tale land a bit here. And what he has done is he has presented, so as we were talking about just prior to this speech, this constitutional amendment that so much is contingent on, another $1.4 billion coming from it. But he says, we can balance the budget either way, regardless, is what he's saying. We can just do more if you pass that constitutional amendment. To be frank, I actually think he tiptoed around that a little more than I thought he would have, not taking it quite as head on in terms of here's plan A, here's plan B, as we have seen, for example, former Governor Pat Quinn did when he presented an alternative to if Illinois did not increase taxes. Perhaps that might be because he could come up to an ethical issue if he, a sitting elected official, does too much to promote a constitutional amendment. I'm not sure if that's what's at hand. But regardless, he did present an optimistic view either path.
Right. And that's why I think he didn't stress the downside. He wanted to stress the upside. And that
could that hurt him in getting the constitutional amendment passed?
No, I don't think so. There's plenty of time for TV ads telling people what's going to happen if they don't vote for this.
Rich Miller, thanks very much for your time and your expertise on Illinois Alignment, because we certainly appreciate it. Amanda, as we move forward here, we're expecting reaction from the legislative leadership here at the Illinois State Capitol the next few minutes. I noticed that during the speech, he called out a number of young people who were shining examples of success for early intervention, for good educational programs. The whole speech in many ways was about investing in the future through early childhood, through K through 12 education to higher education.
So again, you saw Illinois really take a hit nationally, I think, in terms of its reputation during the impasse, the lack of stability that you saw with the budget. And this is sort of trying to get Illinois back. He is saying that we want to be the best place for families to make a home, trying to convince them that these are some examples.
We're joined now by Illinois Senate President Don Harmon, Democrat of Oak Park. Good to have you on the program again.
Thanks for having me back.
What is your main takeaway from what the governor had to say today? A bridge to the future, depending on that graduated income tax passing in November.
I think it was a solid proposal, a budget based in reality, and one that starts the conversation that will unfold over the next couple of months.
You've, of course, been a long-time advocate of the graduated income tax. Is this your vision for it?
I think the governor has outlined a very real budget, one that is a unique budget for a unique year. Midway through this fiscal year, the voters are going to tell us what our available resources are. So he's laid out a budget plan that accounts for either having those resources or not having those resources. And certainly we would want to invest more in education and higher education and human services if we had those resources available.
But when you dig a little deeper into it, you know, the $300 million or $350 million that goes to the new school aid formula because of the education, the results-based budgeting for K through 12 education. If you're holding some of that back in reserve, that bill passed on bipartisan margins around here. Is there a potential downfall to that if it doesn't pass, if the graduated income tax doesn't pass in the fall?
Well, remember, this is just a proposal, and we'll work through those details with the governor and with our Republican colleagues over the next couple of months. I'm confident that my caucus would be eager to fully fund the education funding model that we've developed and made commitments to over the last couple of years. So I expect we'll try to find the resources before May 31st so we can do that regardless of the outcome of November.
Of course, we rarely see a governor's budget proposal come to fruition as is. This is a conversation with the legislature. What of that? Is there anything else that you say, maybe he missed the mark a little bit? We need to go back. It's early. Haven't spoken with your caucus yet, but they got a preview yesterday, so early feedback.
I was really encouraged by the honest assessment of where we are. The governor was blunt, but he was realistic. There are no silver bullet solutions to long-term structural deficits or to our underfunded pensions. He's tackling them as we have, head-on, and trying to solve them in a real way. There aren't easy fixes, but we're prepared to do the hard work and roll up our sleeves.
It was interesting that in this particular budget proposal, he shied away from what he proposed last year in terms of pensions, which was to kind of stretch out the pay down over years so as to reduce the amount of money that the state would have to pay every year for, I think that's what, about $10 billion a year in the upcoming budget because of, $137 billion in unfunded mandates. He shied away from that. He said, we're going to fully fund it this year. So that kind of takes one of the problems from the lawmaker's perspective off the table.
Well, I think that's a great example of how the process works. He made that proposal last year. It was not well received by Democrats or Republicans. And by the time we passed a balanced bipartisan budget, it was no longer part of the conversation.
Go ahead.
That's kind of a give and take around here as governors learn on the job.
Well, and last year was perhaps the best budget we've passed in my time in Springfield. It was bipartisan, it was balanced, and it was by and large boring, which is okay. It's good sometimes for Illinois to be boring. But it was a responsible budget, and this proposal seems to build on that stability and responsible approach to budgeting.
And in recent years, one of the phrases that just sticks with me was a statement the former budget director, the late budget director, Steve Schnorr, said, we went from crafting the budget every year to trying to work with people around the edges to give increases where we could. But we got to this point with the situation with revenue that the budget negotiations became an exercise in allocating pain and scarcity. And this is a pathway away from that, as Governor Pritzker's proposing it, as he would say it.
I think it is, and I'm really excited about some of the proposals. He pointed out early childhood is the best investment we can make and the highest return on investment. But I think even more importantly, an emphasis on college affordability and a recognition that our property taxes are way too high, and we need to do what we can at the state level to push that pressure down.
Help me make sense of this, though. As he presents sort of two paths, he didn't get too drastic in presenting two realities, but that's what it is. Either the constitutional amendment passes or not. If a budget's going to be balanced either way, Why should voters say, okay, you deserve $1.4 billion more in increased taxes?
The budget that contemplates no revenues mid-year is balanced, but it doesn't solve any problems. And that's the commitment we've made, is to try to solve these problems, to pay down our unpaid bills, to fully fund education, to invest more in higher education, to keep people moving into Illinois rather than letting them move out. That's the kind of aspirational budget I'd like to see in place.
Senate President Don Harmon, we will be catching up with you a little later in the spring session to see how all of this bears out. Thanks for your time on Illinois Lawmakers.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
This is live coverage of the reaction to Governor J.B. Pritzker's second annual budget message to the Illinois General Assembly here in the House of Representatives chambers in Springfield. I'm Jack Titchener along with Amanda Vinicky of Chicago tonight on Channel 11 WTTW. Amanda, as you just heard from Senate President Harmon, he believes that his caucus, the Democratic majority over in the Senate, is going to embrace this this budget proposal. They'll have some. We need to mess with this a little bit. We'll need to negotiate some things out. But your takeaway?
Yeah, he seemed generally, of course, as you heard, very positive. That's not super surprising, given that, of course, President Harmon is a Democrat, as is the governor. So that's not surprising. And at the same time, sure, there's some wiggle room. It sounds, my early read was, no matter what happens, we want more money to go to education than is initially in this budget. To be clear, schools would be receiving more money either way, just not as much under, you know, sort of the current path as were the graduated income tax to be passed. Then I believe they would get another, we have actually
one of the top budget million? Experts in the Illinois General Assembly, State Representative Greg Harris, Democrat of Chicago, the House Majority Leader. Good to have you back on the program.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
You listened to what the governor had to say. You've seen what he's proposed. If everything goes the way he would like it to go in November with that graduated income tax, what do you think?
Well, I think it's a very good budget presentation, and it's doing more things than just waiting for November. You know, the things that the governor's talking about is really beginning to restore the stability to our state, paying down our backlog of bills, paying more than we're required to for our pension ramp, beginning to restore our rainy day fund. These are all the things that the government reform groups and that the rating agencies have been looking for to see from the state of Illinois to show that we're back on a path to long-term structural success.
That was one of the things he pointed out early on in the speech as he went through, kind of ticked through a list of his administration's accomplishments thus far. With the help of the General Assembly, a balanced budget last year, the credit ratings are improving for the state of Illinois when we sell bonds for the capital projects and so many other things.
Yeah, I mean, the 4 years before this, when we didn't have a budget, dug our state into a tremendous financial hole. And it's not going to be easy to get out of, but passing balanced budgets each year, chipping away at the problems the way he has done in both of his budgets. It's going to be a long process. This is going to be a tough budget season. It's going to be hard to go through, you know, a lot of these recommendations he's made and prioritize, but it's the work we've got to do to put ourselves back on stable footing.
How drastically different do you foresee a budget looking than what the governor has presented today? You have from now really until the end of May to figure that out. Any priorities that were not included or that perhaps were elevated too much under the governor's plan that need to be
Think, you know, now both the House and the Senate are going to start public hearings. We're going to be taking testimony from the different agencies, understanding the governor's thinking. We're going to be hearing from families across the state, from, you know, education advocates, healthcare advocates. And there may be changes. You know, this is only the beginning of a process today. It's many months, it's many hours of public hearings, and at the end, the House and the Senate have to agree on a proposed budget to send back to the governor for his approval.
In talking to you over the years, you've always been intensely interested in the human services budgets of the state of Illinois, for the Department of Children and Family Services, for human services, and you despaired many times on this program and in the conversations we've had about the shredding of the social safety network for the state of Illinois. Governor Pritzker is talking about rebuilding that, specifically with regard to the Department of Children and Family Services. He's proposing an increase there of, what, $147 million? Is that going to be enough, though? We've had so many tragedies in that agency.
Well, but I'll tell you what. The analogy the governor used, I've never heard this one before, so I'm going to give him credit for it. It was a very good one about the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. I mean, you got to start now, and hopefully the investments he's making are going to bear fruit. As I look at what he's putting money into, increased rates for adoptive and foster parents to help them absorb the cost of child rearing, to begin to restore residential therapy for DCFS kids. These are institutional settings sometimes group homes, highly therapeutic daycare that were eliminated under the Ronner administration. These are why we've now got these kids being shipped all over the United States in shackles we're hearing about, because we got rid of, under the last governor, the places in Illinois that could help these kids with highly intensive needs. So building that capacity back up, that's going to be an investment for the long term, but it's going to take some time. And you're right, we've heard this before, that we're going to make a difference, we're going to make a change from other DCFS. Everyone's going to be watching these guys to be sure that they're keeping their promises and keeping their word.
So much has been put into Illinois having a balanced budget. Mm-hmm. So just help me to sort of sort this out. There's a little bit of natural growth that's projected most years, as long as there isn't a depression, people, businesses making more, therefore sending more money to state government coffers. How is it that we go from last year, the governor proposing, skipping a pension payment, basically, or re-amortizing, that's gone, and yet more money available for these services without a tax increase this year? How do you come up with a balanced budget with just a little bit of baby growth?
Well, the one thing I think that happened is very complicated. It was very obscure, but it was very huge last year, was we passed a tax on insurance companies. On the big health insurance companies that allowed us to draw down additional federal match to cover a lot of our state health care costs. That was $1.2 billion that came into the system last year. It is still there, and it was one of those little notice things that happened, but that's helped in a big, big way.
Did the governor close the deal, as far as you're concerned, with the public today on the graduated income tax, or is this something that we are going to just be beaten over the head with over the next several months before November?
Listen, I think on that, there's people there's people on both sides of that issue, and we're going to be hearing a lot from them. I voted for it because I believe that finally bringing structural integrity to our budget is important, and if that has to be done, I would rather have it be based on ability to pay than a flat tax that would have a disproportionate impact on lower income earners.
One of the arguments that Republicans make against the graduated income tax is, one, we don't trust everybody in Springfield to spend the money wisely, there's always that, and two, once you do this, it'll be so easy for lawmakers to keep ratcheting up the tax brackets on upper income people in the state, and more of those job creators will leave.
Yeah. Well, to your first point, I would say how the money is spent, the Republicans are going to have the same seat at the table as we have in this budget making process and all of our appropriate committees, so they will be there as we make these spending decisions. To the second point, whether it is a flat tax or a graduated tax, legislatures can vote to raise them. But if, with a flat tax, that means a higher disproportionate share falls on lower income families. If we have to raise taxes at all, I would say it should be on the higher income families.
Representative Harris, this is playing out as Rob Blagojevich is really grabbing the spotlight. I've noted, this is something that would have made him irate. Were he the one giving the budget speech? Wait, what? Mm-hmm. People aren't paying attention to me and my plan? Cameras are on him. What is the lasting legacy of Blagojevich and his fiscal, his budgeting that Illinois is still sort of tackling now?
Well, skipped pension payments. I mean, there were years of skipped pension payments and pension borrowing under Blagojevich that people talk about the pension problem we have. A lot of it, or a big part of it, was created back then. So at least in the last 2 years, every payment has been made in full, on time, and the governor said he's in his plan this year, he's paying not only what we absolutely owe, but he's going to start paying $100 million more and increase that overage every year to bring down backlog of unpaid pension.
House Majority Leader Greg Harris, thank you so much for your time on Illinois Lawmakers. We're going to be catching up with you a little later in the spring to see how all this works out. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you.
Amanda, so far the reaction among the Democratic leaders here at the state capitol has been very
positive.
Supportive,
yeah.
Very positive of what the governor laid out here. And they seem to be, I think, supportive of, A, if this graduated income tax does pass, there will be the dollars to spend more on the kinds of programs, well, both parties, to be frank about it. But there is also, I think, a sense of realism, too, about where things stand if it doesn't pass.
There, some of that sense of realism. Again, well, this is all new. We've got to look at the budget, trying to decipher if it's going to be balanced either way. What exactly will that $1.4 billion be used for, or what will happen if it does not come through? We've got basically a chart, but we've got a lot to read into the numbers, and perhaps...
I think we have somebody here who can speak to
yeah.
that, and that is the Senate Republican leader, Bill Brady of Bloomington. Good to have you on the program, sir, as always.
Jack Bennett, good to be here.
Early warning shots fired earlier this week about what this governor's budget proposal might entail, and the warning was, don't be spending hypothetical money. Is that what was proposed today?
Well, I think it was. You know, the governor's got a difficult job, particularly within his party. He's got to placate a lot of people in the Democratic Party who want to spend a lot of money on a lot of programs. He outlined a budget we think is short-sighted in that it relies on tax rate increases that the voters have not yet approved, almost $1.5 billion. And the way they've approached this to what they've told us, we think is short-sighted, because if it's not approved, there'll be at least out $700 million that we'll already have committed to, creating a hole in the budget. We look forward to working with them on several things. We think there's a way to add $350 million to education. We think there's a way to give money, more money to DCFS for their much needed efforts. And we believe there's a way to meet our pension obligations and do some other things. But it's not going to be easy. We think the governor was wise a while ago to ask for his agencies to look at 6.5% adjustments in their budget, efficiencies, have you, that would provide hundreds of millions of dollars without touching health care or education or the pension payments. So we think there's a path. We don't necessarily agree with the way this one was outlined, but we look forward to working to bring a balanced budget together.
Hearing a lot there in that not enough efficiencies, period, no matter which budget takes place. Where would you see those efficiencies?
Well, we like to see what his agencies came up with when he asked them to show them 6.5% efficiencies. We always think there's better ways to retool.
Even after the years of the Rauner administration and impasse, people talk about state government being hollowed out, social service agencies still suffering and lasting those effects. Do you think there's still room to cut?
Oh, absolutely. Technology moves forward, a lot of things happen. Now, we do agree education funding needs to be increased. Property tax relief is a part of that. It's an investment in our future. We believe that DCFS has some serious problems. There are areas that we need to increase, but there are other places to get efficiencies.
Like where? Give me an example.
Well, all the other agencies we believe are need to be looked at.
But no specific in terms of
well,
what?
Well, we haven't seen the documents, and those will come out in the hearing process. But if you take the other agencies and you take 6.5% efficiencies as he ordered, there could be over $800 million. You couple that with $6.5 billion in natural revenue growth, gives you $1.5 billion to reinvest in education, DCFS, make the pension payment, and then money left over that you can go back and look at other areas where maybe cuts were a little too severe and help those areas out. So we just don't think it's a good policy to rely on spending that requires a tax rate increase that the voters haven't yet approved.
Can you walk through the math of that $700 million that you talked about? So you're, talk us through.
Well, there's $650 million in natural revenue growth. The economy is generating not as fast as we'd like, but it is churning new revenues. If you take the 6.5% efficiencies in agencies outside of K through 12, outside of education, outside of healthcare, outside of pensions and debt service, that leaves you upwards of $800 million potentially. Now, we haven't seen the details. We're just doing the math as best we can. That gives you about $1.5 billion. We agree, education, $350 million. We agree, DCFS.
No matter what, you want $350 million for education.
That's the commitment this General Assembly made under Bruce Rauner. We need to live up to that commitment. We believe that we can meet our pension obligations. And that leaves several hundred million dollars that we could use to meet areas that elsewhere require. But things change in business, they change in government, so you have to constantly analyze what your priorities are.
You said things change. One of the things that changed from last year to this year is instead of stretching out the pension payments over a seven-year period to draw down the amount that the state would be paying every year, Governor's talking this time about paying the full payment with existing revenues and some of those hundreds of millions you're talking about. And if the graduated income tax is passed, adding $100 million more on top of that. He called, it was interesting, he went back and called the trying to cut into retiree benefits a fantasy. Is that, you mentioned how this has changed over the years. Has he learned something on the job that what's possible here and what isn't possible?
Well, I think we all did. I've been a pension hawk since I started, and we passed legislation, had it thrown out by the courts. There are still things that can be done. Former President Culleton suggested a reform that would save about $1 billion. I think we'd be foolish not to look at that. But there are things that can be done. We obviously can't pass something that alters the 3% fixed rate COLA. The courts threw that out. We have to be realistic, and if that's what he's talking about. But I do think there are safeguards and constitutional revisions prospectively that we would have benefited from the past.
Yeah, Leader Brady, this is something that, I'm sorry, I think we kind of asked this question before, but I'd like to go back. You're talking about if the graduated income tax proposed constitutional amendment were to go forward, that there would be an extra $1.4 billion in Illinois' budget. Why is that not necessary? Is it possible to really pay the full pension payment, give that $350 million, smoke and mirrors, some people would say, in terms of being able to find efficiencies?
Both COGFA and the governor's office have agreed there's $650 million approximately in new revenue growth. Okay, the governor has called for 6.5% efficiencies in several state agencies. That's $800 million. The math, that's $1.5 billion. So you can fund $350 million in education. You can fund $500 million in pension increases, DCFS, and still have some money if you use what he has laid out. He's just not exercising all that he's asked for. But the fact of the matter is, we would look at it as irresponsible to build a budget on revenues, a tax rate increase that the voters have not yet accepted.
Do you have faith that he's going to work with you Republicans to go forward on this budget plan, given that you clearly have such a disparity in viewpoint about Illinois' tax structure?
Listen, he did last year. He laid out a budget that we couldn't accept. It was going to raid the pension fund again. It was going to do several tax increases and other things. We were able to resolve ourselves, albeit a windfall because of the Trump tax reform, a windfall of over $1 billion. That helped us, but we were able to work with him. I don't know that there's going to be any silver linings this year, but we think there's a reasonable path. We understand he's trying to sell his tax increase. That's what this budget's trying to do. It's trying to sell the tax increase and threaten people if they don't get the tax increase through this budget. We don't think that's a good way to do it, but we're always willing to work to create efficiencies and balance our budget, meeting the priorities. Again, we're for meeting the pensions. We want to increase funding for education so we have property tax relief and the best funded schools in the country.
Leader Brady, thank you so much for your time on Illinois Lawmakers. As I was mentioning the previous guest, we're going to touch base with you a little later in the spring session to see how all this is working out, and in your case, how those Republican voices are being heard at the table. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Republican Leader
Jeff,
Bill Brady of Bloomington, our guest on Illinois Lawmakers. We'll be making way in just a moment for the House Republican Leader, Jim Durkin of Western Springs, here on Illinois Lawmakers.
Jack, he's going to have a similar message. Going to go out all in
I
there.
I think he is. I think he is. But that's what we love to have here at the Illinois Lawmakers set, a good, robust discussion of everything that's going on here at the state capitol. And, you know, one of the things that strikes me is last year there was so much pent-up demand for progress on the part of both Republicans and Democrats. This is a different year. Situation's a lot
different. Very much a different year. Still, for sure, recovering from that historic budget impasse. As I think you've heard from several of these legislators, that is going to continue for years. A lot of this is lasting legacy from choices made, not just under former governors Blagojevich and Rauner, but prior to that. What now we will see in this year really is predicated on the path forward, and will that rely on an entirely different tax structure or not? That is so much of this year.
Here with the House Republican viewpoint on that is Representative Jim Durkin, the House Republican leader from Western Springs. You warned a little earlier in the week, leader, that the governor, whatever you do, don't be spending hypothetical money. Is that what was proposed today?
That's what I heard, yes. The governor has kind of taken a bifurcated track, whether we pass the constitutional amendment to fulfill a campaign promise, or we could actually negotiate a budget like we did last year without having to ask for a tax increase. So I want an austere government. I want a government that's efficient, one that has that we're going to be able to, that'll spend the money that it has at hand. So we need to get back to that type of philosophy. What I heard today was I wasn't happy with it. It seemed like it was more driven by giving. Demanding that certain groups get engaged, otherwise that their funding, whether it's human services or education, aren't going to get funded without this constitutional amendment. So I see the governor dangling that in front of people of the state of Illinois, that if you don't pass this, oh boy, look what's going to happen. So that's not the right way to go about it. We got this done last year and spent $40 billion by negotiating all four caucuses without having to raise taxes or any new tax increases on Illinois citizens. And that's what I'm asking for again this year.
As Amanda and I were just talking a little bit earlier, last year is a lot different than this year, or vice versa, because there was so much pent-up demand on the part of Republicans and Democrats to get some things done, like a capital bill. There was willpower to raise the gas tax.
Yeah.
There was willpower to do a lot of things. This is a different time, though. I don't know that there's going to be so much buy-in for that in crafting this next budget. Will this budget be as easy to... A friend of mine told me this morning, he said, well, it's going to be interesting to see if we can stuff all the sausage in the casing.
Look, this is how all these budget addresses start. They're a wish list, and they're hopes and dreams of how we're going to be able to manage things. But I think as we go down the road, Democrats and Republicans alike are going to say that, you know what, this is not working out the way it should be. I hope that the Democrats take the advice and say, you know what, let's stick at last year's level. Let's negotiate this without having to go back and ask for more tax increases. This can get done. I've seen this happen. We did it in a matter of 24 hours last May. So the governor is very committed towards his to fulfilling a political agenda from the constitutional amendment, but I think that that's irresponsible for budgeting this year.
One other thing that came up in last year's, at the very last minute, the governor put on the table, at the request of House and Senate Republicans, some significant business reforms. Is there a similar, let's say, carrot that he can put on the table or dangle in front of the Republicans this year?
Well, you know what, I think that we have to live within our means, but there's an issue that is very important to Democrats and Republicans in both chambers, and that's the issue of redistricting reform. Fair maps. That's something that I clearly think is an item that I don't think it should be negotiated, a matter of negotiations. It's just right. It's a responsible thing to do. But we're in a year where, you know, sometimes there's give and take. But what I hear from the Democrats, they all have their own proposals. They're all, you know, they want to have a independent map group out. But the fact is, this is the time to move forward. And if this is something that can be part of a negotiation at the end of session, I'm fine with that. But it is an important issue that should not be left on the side.
What about the budget that the governor's put forth? Should voters reject the constitutional amendment for a graduated income tax? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't like the fact that the governor is holding money, as he called reserves, which is basically putting groups as hostages, that if it doesn't pass the graduated tax, then this money is not going to go to you. We have a budget surplus this year. The finances in the state are better. I don't expect things to change dramatically, and I do believe that we will receive some type of benefit from the federal government, maybe not to the extent we did last time. But we're running with a surplus. And when you run with a surplus, you know, I think it's good news. It means that we don't have to ask taxpayers, small businessmen and women, our employers, and also the citizens of Illinois, you know what? We have to support more taxes just to justify this spending. It's just wrong.
But as you look forward to this, there are so many areas of state government. You've been here a long time at the Capitol.
I've been told that.
We've both been here for a while. But as we've looked at things over the last 10 to 20 years, we've seen a number of critical state agencies hollowed out because of the budget problems, because of the budget impasse. And
because of pension spending.
And the pension spending that has been ratcheted up for years around here.
Yeah.
Can you make the kind of investment, though, let's say that the income tax proposal doesn't pass, can you make the kind of investment in an agency like DCFS that'll make a difference on the ground to protect kids' lives?
Well, you know what, DCFS is something that is, it's a very tragic situation that is going on at that agency. It has been for a number of years. I'm open to an investment, but money alone is not going to solve the problems within DCFS. And along with a lot of our other agencies, just remember a few months ago, the governor proposed a 6.5 increase, a decrease in spending with the agency directors across the board. That was the governor's request. Those efficiencies and those spending issues were brought to the governor, but it wasn't addressed today. And we know that this 6.5% is not going to affect the administration. It's not going to affect the services that these agencies are providing. So I think the governor needs to get back on track about making our agencies more efficient and being consistent with what he asked them last fall.
This is live coverage of Governor J.B. Pritzker's State of the State speech on Illinois Public Radio and Public Television. Amanda, of course, you and I have been here for a while, and we've seen a lot of things happen at the State House, including the removal of a former governor who just last night came back home to Chicago. Peter Durkin, you were in charge of the House's prosecution of that case. What was your reaction to what happened yesterday?
I'm very disappointed. I was raised, and many of us were raised, on the rule of law. Follow the rule of law, but the fact is that there's consequences for bad actions. Rob Blagojevich does not deserve any sympathy from anyone. I'm disappointed with the president. It was a mistake, but I think it's more of a, because of Rod Blagojevich's celebrity is what gave him this relief from the president, when there's poor souls that are sitting within the Bureau of Prisons that have committed crimes less than him, that will not get this type of consideration from the president, just because it's Rob Blagojevich. And to me, it's a very, I think it's within his power to do what he did, but I think it sets a bad example, particularly here in Illinois, about corruption. He was sent away and he was convicted of corrupt acts. We are currently going through a massive investigation by the U.S. Attorney and the Federal Bureau of Investigation in Illinois. And it just speaks volumes of what this president thinks about the state of Illinois and what we're trying to do to clean up this cesspool that exists in Illinois.
Are you going to be able to craft a budget to come together when you've just called, and you're not alone, by the way, the capital cesspool, when legislators are wondering, who might be secretly recording my conversation for the FBI?
We don't have a choice. We come down here, and our single greatest responsibility every year is to pass a balanced budget, one that reflects the income that the state treasury will take in, but one that is going to provide the necessary services for Illinois citizens. And we can do that. We can do that with, I think, as the governor said, we can roll up our sleeves like we did last May. I'm prepared to do that again.
Peter Durkin, thank you so much for your time on
Thank
Illinois
you.
Lawmakers. And for Amanda Vinicky from Channel 11 in Chicago, thank you so much. That has been live coverage of the governor's budget message and reaction from legislative leadership here on Illinois Lawmakers on Illinois Public Radio and Television. So long from all of us at Illinois Lawmakers. Goodbye from Springfield.